It's Wisconsin Today. I'm Rob Ferret. According to the Parkinson's Foundation, over a million people in the U.S. live with Parkinson's disease, an often disabling neurological condition. That number includes over 20,000 people here in Wisconsin. Parkinson's can cause motor-related symptoms like physical tremor, stiffness, slowness, or balance issues. It can come with lots of other symptoms, too, things like loss of smell, constipation, depression, REM sleep behavior disorder, and more. For treatment of symptoms, people sometimes use medications, physical therapy, and other treatments. Some undergo deep brain stimulation. That's where surgeons implant tiny, programmable probes in the brain to help control symptoms. In Wisconsin, researchers at UW-Eau Claire are using the technology behind deep brain stimulation in a different way with the same goal. They're building these gloves that, when worn, could help relieve Parkinson's symptoms. Recently, that research got the support of the Mayo Clinic with an $82,000 grant. Later, we'll talk to some of the people behind those gloves, including a master's student who's building them as her thesis. First, we'll learn more about Parkinson's disease itself. Daisy Reimer is a nurse practitioner and director of medical advising and education at Wisconsin Parkinson Association. She hosts two podcasts, Parkinson's Empower Talks, Insights from the Experts, and Pearls for Parkinson's, Tips for Daily Living with Parkinson's. Daisy, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate being here.
Well, both in your work in healthcare and with the Parkinson Association, with your podcast, you've clearly devoted yourself to people, to working with people with Parkinson's. What led to that? What inspired you to do so much in this field?
That's a good question. I think it was just destiny. I've been doing it for over 30 years and have played so many different roles. I've been a researcher. I've been a clinician. I've worked in education as a public speaker. So it's a wonderful community. And when you get into this community and you get to know people, you know why you stay.
Now, people have probably heard of Parkinson's disease, but if they haven't encountered it in their own, say, families, they may not know much about it. Can you tell us some of the basics, the symptoms of Parkinson's disease and how it affects a daily life?
Sure. Yeah, so there are four cardinal features of Parkinson's, and those include tremor, stiffness, slowness, and what we call postural instability, which really means balance problems. And then there are also some non-motor features such as constipation and anxiety and depression, fatigue and sleep disruption, cognitive issues. I would say Parkinson's is like a pot of stew and you don't know what you're going to get on your spoon. So it's really very diverse and it impacts people's day in many ways. Initially, you know, people can have problems with maybe a little bit of tremor or notice that they're slower than they normally are, have some balance problems. But as the disease progresses, they do notice problems with walking and dressing and eating challenges over time. And some people even notice that they have like good times and bad times throughout the day. We call that motor fluctuations as they go along and as they are treated.
I've got a couple relatives who are in, I think, earlier stages of Parkinson's. The first warning signs were different for them. One, it was swallowing first, for example.
Yes.
Given that it shows up differently in different people, does that make it a challenge to diagnose?
Oh, sure does. Only 50% of people with Parkinson's even have a tremor. So some of these other issues like balance, you know, you could chalk it up to a lot of different reasons why you might have balance problems. So it really does make it difficult to diagnose. And those people actually do get diagnosed later because of the fact that they think, well, I'm just getting older. Maybe it's just arthritis. Maybe I've been working really hard all these years, and it's just taking its toll on my body, so they don't go in as early.
What do we know about what causes Parkinson's, why one person gets it and why another doesn't?
Yeah, we've really become more advanced in that area. We know that genetics plays much more of a role in Parkinson's, and also, you know, our exposures and things. So, but the real kind of clue in here is that there's a protein in the brain. It's called alpha-synuclein. And that protein is supposed to be there, but it misfolds and it clumps together in Parkinson's and it forms what we call Lewy bodies. And those Lewy bodies get in the way. They disrupt the dopamine-producing neurons. And that's really where those symptoms of Parkinson's come in. And you really have to also be losing dopamine in the brain, those dopamine producing neurons, about 70% before motor symptoms of Parkinson's come into play.
When someone is diagnosed with Parkinson's, what is the long-term prognosis? Because it seems like we see some people, you know, live with challenges for a very long time. Mm-hmm. Some people, it seems to change their lives very, very quickly. And I've known of people who passed on within a couple of years of a diagnosis. What do we look at? What determines that prognosis?
Yeah, that's very different for everybody. A few things. So Parkinson's now, we really think it's not just one disease. There are forms of what we call Parkinsonism. And so it really is important to have the diagnostic workup to rule in or rule out other conditions that may mimic Parkinson's disease. So we kind of know that there are certain cohorts of people that do progress at different rates. And then another piece of that is, what's the rest of your general health look like, right? Are there other issues at hand, like heart disease or any pulmonary issues and things that are confounding the Parkinson's diagnosis? And also, what do you do about it? And that's kind of where I come in too, is really promoting exercise and good nutrition and things, because there are things that we can do to take control and guide and steer our aging process.
In just a few moments, I want to ask you about treatment, but first, research right now. As you look around the world of Parkinson's research, what do you see the most potential, or what are you the most excited about?
There's a lot of great research. There's a lot of innovation in the medications that are being used, longer acting and smoother medications, so that people, when I mentioned about having fluctuations when their medications kick in and wear off, that it's a steadier blood level. So there's a couple of new subcutaneous medications that are out, and those are infusion therapies that are meant to keep a steady blood level of the drugs so that there aren't those motor fluctuations. Then there are also, like I mentioned, that alpha-synuclein, there's a new spinal fluid test that can detect that misfolded alpha-synuclein. And so that's kind of on the horizon. It's not standard practice yet. So that's something that Michael J. Fox Foundation had now announced about a year ago. There's another one that I did use frequently in my clinic, skin biopsy, which can test for that alpha-synuclein in the nerve fibers. So all we did is take skin samples of three different areas. You go out with three Band-Aids, and in a week, you find out if you have that alpha-synuclein, and that can help to guide us more towards the proper diagnosis. Unfortunately, that one can't tell us if it's one of those Parkinsonisms. So there are some limitations to those as well. And then there's deep brain stimulators. So that is an electrode that's placed in the brain, and it can help. We can program that. I would say you have to be an electrician and a neurologist to be able to figure out how to kind of work that, because it has to do with controlling with electricity, much like you do a heart pacemaker. This is a pacemaker for the brain, and controlling the symptoms with that. And that can be very effective as well.
And you mentioned the brain implants and medication. I understand there's a big role that can be played by things like physical therapy and exercise for a lot of those movement-related conditions. What kind of practices and therapies are out there that at least many people find helpful?
Oh, absolutely. I really can't stress it enough. And we really know that exercise is so important. If I take one person who exercises and another one who is sitting and watching TV and really doesn't exercise, they're going to progress completely differently through the disease process. And the person who exercises is going to do much better. For those individuals who have balance problems, there are no pills for that. It really is about exercise to retrain the brain, to reprogram the brain, and get it to have better balance. And then that muscle control is important too. So you have to have strong muscles. There are so many different programs out there, and they've all been very well researched. There are therapists who are trained in a program called LSVT. It's called Lee Silverman Big Therapy. And that is a program that is specially for Parkinson's disease, and we can prescribe that. There's one called Rock Steady Boxing, which is one of my absolute favorites.
Boxing, they're like boxing, punching, yeah. And yeah, okay.
Punching bags, yeah, and they have a lot of fun with it. And all of the people who are trained in rock steady boxing are just so motivating, and it's an exciting program. There are just so many of them out there. There are dance programs for Parkinson's, there's Tai Chi, there's swimming. All of them have shown beneficial with Parkinson's movement.
Dacey, you have a couple podcasts related to Parkinson's disease. One of them involves Pearls for Wisdom. It's called Pearls for Parkinson's. Can you leave us with a pearl of wisdom for somebody out there who might have Parkinson's or is a caregiver?
Absolutely. I think what I mentioned before about staying active and exercising is really a big key. But the other thing is to stay away from, you know, fried foods, highly processed foods, and added sugars. And I think that applies to any of us as we age, because we do know that those are detrimental to our health, but especially to our neurologic health. There's increased inflammation. And so I do get into that in detail about what are the good foods and bad foods for our brains, nutrition and brain health in my Pearls for Parkinson's. But that is really an important piece to go through your cupboards and make sure that you're eating right so that you're staying healthy and you've got good brain health.
Dacey, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate being here.
That was Dacey Reimer, nurse practitioner and director of medical advising and education at Wisconsin Parkinson Association. We learned about her experience working with patients who have undergone deep brain stimulation, a treatment where surgeons implant tiny programmable probes in the brain to help control symptoms of Parkinson's disease. Now, researchers at UW-Eau Claire are looking at different ways to use that kind of technology to treat Parkinson's symptoms. But instead of surgically implanting it in the brain, the technology could be worn as a glove. Kella Dexheimer is a master's student in the exercise physiology program at UW-Eau Claire, where she earned her bachelor's in biomedical engineering. Kella is building prototypes of these gloves as her thesis. Also with us, Nicholas Belts, associate professor of kinesiology at UW-Eau Claire. He's director of the Exercise Physiology Lab and the Parkinson's Exercise Program and is helping support Kella's thesis. Nick, welcome to Wisconsin Today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And Kella, thanks for being with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Kella, please start by painting us a picture of this glove you're working on to help people with Parkinson's symptoms. I can't picture it. What does it look like?
So we've taken a gaming glove and basically have put motors into the fingertips of this glove and sewn wires down the front side of the glove into a front pack that the participants will wear on their chest.
All right. And Nick, this is a partnership, I understand, with Mayo involved. What made you bring this one in on board and bring Kella onto the project?
Yeah, it kind of starts back a few years ago when we had some members of our Parkinson's exercise program at our university talk to me about these exciting non-invasive gloves that can potentially help individuals with Parkinson's treat some of their symptoms. These gloves were not invented by us, come from a lab in Stanford, the Peter Tass lab, and they built these gloves and published their findings of how to build them, and come to find out that individuals in our community were building these gloves in their garage. I was approached by some faculty members in the material science biomedical engineering department. So they were looking for project ideas for some of their students. And I said, well, I think this kind of electrical engineering biomedical thing would be pretty neat for some of your students to work on. And then Kella is one of the first students in our exercise physiology master's program looking for a thesis with aspirations of a PhD, and it's just a beautiful timing for all of that, and all of it couldn't be done without the funding of a collaborative Mayo Clinic grant that we have in partnership with UW-Eau Claire and Mayo Clinic. And that's where we are. We have a lot of awesome people doing a lot of awesome work to make this all happen.
And Kella, you described what the glove looks like, and it's a gaming glove. So what is it doing when that person with Parkinson's puts it on? What's the glove doing for them?
So pretty much it's taken from the Stanford study. The motors are sending out like a stimulation. It's like a buzzing sensation in their fingertips that's supposed to be kind of mimicking a type of deep brain stimulation that is the more invasive procedure for Parkinson's patients. And so what we have set up right now is that every fingertip except for the thumb is getting stimulated in this glove.
Nick, you work with people dealing with Parkinson's in your Parkinson's exercise program. What's the process like? You've mentioned there's a back and forth. You bring the gloves to the patients, they try them on, give you feedback. Can you talk about what that process has been like?
Yeah, the process has been great. The members of our program are very motivated individuals to come in from the community and improve their symptoms via means of exercise. And we mainly specialize in the resistance training or weightlifting aspect of that. Periodically, the students who have been building the gloves will bring them up. The members will try them on, see about fit. They'll move around with the gloves on to see if the wiring is getting in the way, to see if the battery pack needs to be moved to a place that would be, I guess, a little more ergonomical. If they have to wear these for 2 hours in the morning and 2 hours in the evening, what types of things would they be doing? You know, could they perhaps do some activities of daily living, like clean around the house? Could they read a book? Could they use their phone? And then they'll go back to their lab with their ideas, work with Dr. McKellstrom, and try to figure out how can we improve this from a functional standpoint. And that's kind of how all this has evolved.
Yeah, Calla, can you talk about some of the adaptations you've made as this process goes on based on feedback from people actually trying the glove out?
Yeah, I guess more recently this summer, we've been bringing the gloves up and just altering how we're attaching the wiring to the gloves to make sure that the wiring is actually staying on, the motors are staying in place. We've implemented basically a running vest that they can put the battery pack into. It's pretty lightweight, and then they can walk around with that. And that's another thing that we've kind of adapted into using.
Nick, broadening the lens a little bit, this kind of partnership between healthcare providers, the patients themselves, and then you and your colleagues at UW-Eau Claire, how valuable is this for, well, I guess for all parties concerned?
Extremely valuable, and that's a good point. I think the main piece of the partnership and what we focus on is simply improving or enhancing accessibility for something like this, right? These aren't exactly a FDA-approved treatment option from a medical professional standpoint, which is okay. I believe the Stanford Lab is working on something like that, right? Somewhere with a little more funding that has a bigger reach. But from our standpoint, you know, people are building these in their garage, and they have been having great results for alleviating some symptoms. But do they know anyone with the expertise to build them? There are people in our community that do that, but these individuals only have so much time, right? Or if they wanted to buy them commercially, you can purchase them, but they can be upwards of thousands of dollars. So with this partnership, it provides the resources to be able to distribute gloves like this to individuals as part of a research study where they might not otherwise have that opportunity. Once we get this rolling, we'll just add to the generalizable body of knowledge on the potential for these gloves.
And we'll leave it there. Nick, thanks for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having us.
And Calla, thanks for sharing your work with us.
Yeah, thank you.
That was Calla Dexheimer and Nick Belch from UW-Eau Claire. We talked about their work building gloves that could help people with Parkinson's disease manage their symptoms. Earlier, we heard from Daisy Reimer, nurse practitioner and director of medical advising and education at Wisconsin Parkinson Association.